exciting me. Once in Germany, someone said nine. Once in Germany, someone said nine.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is David Marples, a distinguished university professor in the Department of History and Classics at the University of Alberta. He's also the director of the Stashyuk Program for the Study of Contemporary Ukraine at the University of Alberta and president of the North American Association for Belarusian Studies. He's the author of The Lukashenko Phenomenon, Elections, Propaganda, and the Foundations of Political Authority in Belarus, Prospect for Democracy in Belarus, and Belarus, a Denationalized Nation. His latest book is Russia in the 20th Century, The Quest for Stability. Welcome to Background Briefing, David Marples.
Thank you.
And you also have an article at the Eurasia Daily Monitor, Swedish Ambassador's Departure from Belarus. And of course, that is the latest scandal, if you will, in Belarus. It stems from a public relations stunt by a Swedish public relations firm who parachuted in a bunch of teddy bears, almost sort of innocuous in a way as what's going on in Moscow with the three young punk rockers having the book thrown at them. But this guy in Belarus, he's truly a throwback, isn't he?
Yes, he is. And, you know, but one of the things he's always boasted about is that Belarus was the nation that bore the brunt of losses in World War II, but eventually, along with the rest of the Soviet forces, got rid of the fascists, freed Europe, and that the borders are basically sacrosanct and nothing is ever going to come through them again. And at the same time, he just signed an agreement with Russia and Kazakhstan for a joint defense force on the borders of each country. So it's very embarrassing for him, having made these boasts, that this plane could just come through the border seemingly undetected and then drop off all these teddy bears, something like 800 altogether. And, you know, so I think he's actually lashing out as a result of that, more than anything else that the Swedish, you know, anything that the Swedish ambassador did, for example. He seems to have been completely unaware of what was going to happen, had nothing to do with it, never made a statement about it, as far as I can tell. And yet, you know, he's the one who's really borne the brunt of the anger of the president.
And this was obviously, I can't imagine that the Swedish public relations firm would have cleared this stunt in advance with the Swedish authorities, who clearly would not have supported it. But it has led to the firing, has it not, of almost all the top people in generals, the chairman of the State Border Committee, the head of air defenses, the head of the armed forces was reprimanded, the defense minister as well, first deputy minister, state secretary of security, chairman of the state security, they're the KGB as they call themselves. Lukashenko lashed out at them too.
Yes, I mean, everyone is a scapegoat for this one. And certainly, you know, theoretically, they were responsible for the lack of vigilance, you might say, over the border. But in reality, probably there wasn't a whole lot people in Minsk could have done about it. I mean, people sitting in the KGB offices, like the head of the KGB, would have been absolutely clueless that this little stunt was about to take place. And I think also, officially, nothing was actually said about it for a couple of weeks. And I think the authorities would have been quite happy to keep it quiet. The problem was that when people were picking up these teddy bears, some people were taking photographs, putting them on the internet, and one of them sent one of the teddy bears, I believe, to a photographer who had his own blog site, and it was publicized there. And someone else actually took a clip of the teddy bears landing in the town of Ivanets, about 30 or 40 miles or so from Minsk. And all this went around the YouTube. So once this happened, it was on a kind of world level. There was no longer any possibility of the government denying that it had happened or ignoring it anymore. And Lukashenko probably found out about it then too. And that seems to have inflamed his anger even more.
Well, of course, he's lashed out at the poor, unfortunate blogger, the 20-year-old photojournalist, right, who published this stuff on the internet, and he's now accused of assisting in an illegal border crossing.
He's accused of assisting a border crossing, and since I wrote my article, I heard the young girl who gave him a photograph has actually been arrested too. I think she's even younger than he is. Yeah, and it's very, you know, it is analogous, I think, to what's happening with Pussy Riot in Moscow. It seems in a way that, you know, you get these old-style hardline leaders who simply can't deal with new forms of public information and social media, and they don't really know how to go about censoring it in any kind of meaningful way. So no matter how repressive these regimes, always something seems to happen to embarrass them. And as you say, is now lashed out at Sweden. And since yesterday, all the Swedish embassy officials have been asked to leave Minsk now. The entire embassy has been closed down. So it's not just the ambassador now and a couple of officials. The whole thing is shut down. So it's created a major international impasse. I mean, the two countries haven't actually broken off diplomatic relations yet, but, you know, that would be the logical next step.
Again, I'm speaking with David Marples, a distinguished university professor in the Department of History and Classics at the University of Alberta, where he directs the Stashyuk program in the study of contemporary Ukraine, and also he's the head of the North American Association for Belarusian Studies. We're talking about how a Swedish public relations firm staged a stunt by flying a small aircraft in from Lithuania over the airspace of Belarus, dropping about 800 teddy bears onto the town of Vinnytsia. And as David said, nothing was heard of it until it got onto YouTube. And now the poor person who put it on YouTube is being scapegoated. And you mentioned a minute ago the inability of these dictatorial totalitarian regimes and their leadership adjusting to the new internet age. Is that to say that at some point or other there's going to be a Belarusian spring?
Yeah, that may be going a little too far right now, but I certainly think there are signs of it happening, especially among younger people. I think a lot of the problems with Belarus really depend on the economic situation. You know, if people are seriously in economic difficulties, can't find food products in stores, wages don't keep pace with inflation, etc., as was the case last year, then you may really see some signs of change. But at the moment, through extensive borrowing from China, from Russia in particular, also the CIS's own fund, Lukashenko's government has sort of managed to circumvent an immediate crisis. So in addition, they've given enormous powers to the KGB to crack down on the slightest sign of any public demonstrations. The most ridiculous example of this occurred last summer when some people were arrested for clapping in public. That was seen as a sign of subversion. And at that same time, there happened to be some war veterans on a military parade, and Lukashenko made an exception and said that people would be allowed to clap the war veterans, but in fact, no one else. So even clapping became a public offense. And in one example, a one-armed man was arrested for clapping. So, you know, it's a joke in a way. And in fact, the founder of the firm that sent the teddy bears, a man called Per Cromwell, wrote a letter to Lukashenko in which he told him that he was regarded on the internet as a clown. And I think that nothing hurts dictators more than being made to look stupid and ridiculous in the public eye.
Well, but you know, what you're telling us, David Marples, it sounds like that Charlie Chaplin film, The Dictator. I mean, the guy is a clown, isn't he? And he's also an anachronism.
He is, you know, but for some time, he managed to sort of strike a chord with a sector of the public, mainly the elderly, mainly people who could remember the war, mainly people who were nostalgic for Soviet times. And it's often forgotten that the Republic of Belarus, I mean, it's only today about 9.5 million, was actually one of the better-off republics in the latter part of the Soviet Union's existence. I mean, economically, they were doing quite well, mainly, you know, producing machine tools, tractors, things of that nature. But after the end of the Soviet Union, the population suffered a dramatic loss in the standard of living. Many people simply couldn't afford to even go out shopping. And in 1994, when Lukashenko came to power, he put a stop to all privatization, to the introduction of market forces, any kind of reforms, and introduced this kind of national state system over the economy, Soviet style, of course, but heavily subsidized, so that everybody got a wage and everybody at the end of their career would get a pension. And, you know, that proved, not surprisingly, quite popular among the population as long as it could last. But it could only last as long as Russia provided cheap oil and gas and other products that Belarus could then resell on the world market. And that stopped around 2002 to 2004, in that kind of period, when Russia started to charge world prices for their gas and oil. So it's a fairly recent phenomenon, I think, that Lukashenko's been in any kind of trouble. And he's been in power for 18 years, you know, so it's not Gaddafi, but nevertheless, it's a long time.
Well, my understanding, though, is that what supplements this sclerotic Soviet-style economy is smuggling. They're on the border between Belarus and Poland. That was, in effect, the border between the communist-style economies in the West. And isn't that true, that there's enormous amounts of smuggling go on? And weren't they also smuggling oil?
Yes. Smuggling went on. And one other product that was smuggled quite on a regular basis was weapons. Belarus has supplied arms to some of the, let's say, less pleasant states of the world. And this was a profitable operation. I think it's become more difficult now to penetrate the Polish border quite so easily. It still happens. But since Poland joined the European Union, it's become more difficult. And, you know, every truck or even train that goes over the border is there for an hour or two. I mean, everything is really checked more thoroughly anyway than in the past. But these were the means, I think, by which Belarus has managed to survive as, you know, let's say a state that's not communist, but it's by no means a capitalist one either. I mean, it's some sort of state authoritarian, carefully controlled by the government. Every facet of the economy is controlled.
Well, David Marples, Lukashenko himself, of course, is a former border guard. So as you point out in your article at Eurasia Daily Monitor, he took this quite personally, being a former border guard himself, as well as his two elder sons have also served in that position. But, of course, you have to contrast this paranoid reaction to this Swedish public relations stunt of dropping teddy bears from a light aircraft to what happened in 1987 in the USSR, when a 19-year-old German pilot landed a Cessna in Red Square. The Russians certainly didn't behave as brutally and as arbitrarily as Lukashenko is in this case. So again, it gets down to the idea that this is a dictatorship in Europe, the last dictator. Not that Putin is anything less, but at least Putin goes through the cosmetic ritual of pretending to be democratic.
Well, I mean, actually, I think you've hit the right spot there. I think Putin's credibility now is also coming into question, and that really would make life a lot more difficult for Lukashenko, because even though the two of them don't really get along, it is still Russia that's propping up the, you know, this sort of decrepit state in Belarus. And if Russia should, you know, at some point get rid of Putin, have some kind of democratic election or massive public protest, I think that would spill over into Belarus and even Ukraine, of course, where Ukraine's situation is deteriorating as well in terms of democracy. So the more isolated, I think, Lukashenko is, the more likely we are to see some changes. And, you know, he's focused on Sweden. And I think, you know, one reason why is that the Swedish ambassador was also seen by the regime as a kind of focus of subversion, opposition groups. He would always hang around with people, and he spoke fluent Belarusian, which is very, very rare among embassy staff. Many of them will speak Russian, but very few will speak the local language. And it gave him a distinct advantage, I think, in Belarusian society, where he could simply wander around and talk to anyone, and became very popular as a result, and was seen as a kind of representative of a Europe that wanted change in Belarus. You know, I think Sweden has actually not been the most forceful country in terms of reprimanding Lukashenko every time he commits a human rights abuse. But nevertheless, anyone who can speak fluent Belarusian in the embassy staff is regarded as a big problem. So I think, you know, this was a good excuse for Belarus to get rid of a troublesome ambassador.
Yes, the Swedes are not famous for being aggressive or assertive. So David Marples, again, distinguished university professor at the Department of History and Classics at the University of Alberta, where he directs the Stasiuk program in the study of contemporary Ukraine. He's also the president of the North American Association for Belarusian Studies. I guess, in a way, the Belarusians are the beneficiaries of the fact that the Russians, at the behest of the West, decided not to sell the advanced S-300 ground-to-air anti-aircraft missile system, which is that's apparently a part of the system that you mentioned earlier, with Russia bolstering the air defenses of Kazakhstan and Belarus. I guess this is a gift, right? The S-300 system?
Yes. Yeah, it is. I mean, I couldn't say from Alberta, Canada, but I'm assuming it's not in place yet.
Right.
It's supposed to be in place by 2013. You know, but the reverse side of this, of course, is that if the plane had been immediately shot down, you and I would be having a conversation about something quite different. But, you know, ultimately we would be condemning Lukashenko even more than we are now.
Right.
So, you know, what really would have been the best solution? I mean, as far as this public relations scheme was concerned, I mean, this is a pretty dangerous thing to do. And, you know, I would imagine, you know, no matter what the country, there would have been some kind of protest. But it's really the overreaction, I think, that causes the raised eyebrows, you know, arresting some young kid for putting a photograph on the internet. It's just stupid, I think. And I see it as a sign of insecurity and weakness. You know, this is what I wrote in the article. Obviously, very frightened, watching what's happening in the Middle East and all these regimes coming tumbling down, and thinking, you know, I could be the next one. You know,
right.
I believe, you know, all dictators must have very private thoughts, you know, because who do they talk to? In Lukashenko's case, he doesn't live with his wife anyway. He lives with his 7-year-old son. And it created a kind of paranoia almost of being surrounded by enemies. And sooner or later, you know, people are going to try and overthrow him. Well, I don't think it's really coming, you know, I don't really see where it's coming from, but that seems to be how he thinks.
Well, just in closing, David Marples, I recall that an American hot air balloonist drifted into Belarusian airspace, and they shot him down, and he died. I mean, the air defense.
Two of them, actually.
Two of them, really? I mean,
yeah.
What kind of paranoia is that? You can see a slow-moving balloon, you know it's not, you know, a B-52 bomber. You know, that was a pretty amazing when that happened.
Yeah, and that was 17 years ago, you know, so not a lot has changed.
Hmm. Well, I take it then that we can only hope that Your point is that really the important change would have to happen in Russia, as long as, because that's the sponsor of this guy. So if Putin is rolling back the clock on democracy as much as he can, if there's a countervailing Russian revolution from the people against this new authoritarianism, then eventually that'll be the beginning of the end of Lukashenko.
Yeah, and sometimes these things happen quite suddenly, quite unexpectedly. I mean, I think people of Belarus are very, peace-loving, quiet, unobtrusive. There's a, distinct lack of what you might call jingoistic type of nationalism there. I mean, you hardly would know that you cross the border from Russia to Belarus, for example, in terms of scenery, how people speak, how they behave, or whatever. So, they're a quiet people by nature. But, eventually people get tired of the same thing over and over again if it's not bringing any results. And I think with the economic downturn, an obvious lack of ideas, and now, brutality magnified in so many different ways over the past couple of years, people are getting tired of it. And sooner or later, they will want a change. I mean, I don't think it's going to come through a ballot box because all the elections are carefully controlled. It's got to come from sort of ground roots, public protests, with some help from outside. And I think that help would probably mean it has to come from Russia.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today, David Marples.
Yep, you're very welcome.
Again, I've been speaking with David Marples, who's a distinguished university professor in the Department of History and Classics at the University of Alberta, where he directs the Stashyuk program for the study of contemporary Ukraine. He's also president of the North American Association for Belarusian Studies and the author of The Lukashenko Phenomenon, Elections, Propaganda, and the Foundations of Political Authority in Belarus, Prospects for Democracy in Belarus, and Belarus, a Denationalized Nation. His latest book is Russia in the 20th Century, The Quest for Stability. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. You can also contact me, and I'll be back again tomorrow at 5 p.m. with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.